Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday, June 16th, 59 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Adam Carroll. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. And I'm sure everyone's already heard about the big day yesterday in Salt Lake of 107 degrees, which is only the third time that we've ever reached that number. Call it the all-time hottest it's ever been. So it was the all-time hottest June day ever. And in Park City, you know, we're not going to see much of a reprieve from the warm from the heat and warmth out there here, both overnight and also during the day, as we're going to be yet again close to 90 degrees here across the Park City area, even with this cold front that is more or less ticking temperatures down. But when you go from mid hundreds down to 5 or 10 degrees, it still feels hot out there. And same thing goes for the Wasatch Back. Heber's looking at 99 today yet again. That would be another record, just as it would be in Park City. So we're continuing to deal with this historic heat wave out there. We also have haze and smoky skies to deal with, because not only do we have the local fires going on, but we have Arizona wildfires, and the direction of our smoke is coming in from the south to north, which is, of course, related to what we've been dealing with lately of the southerly winds. Now, with this front, it has more or less changed directions to a west-northwest type of flow. So in northern Utah, hazy skies should be a little bit more thin today and over the course of the next couple of days before it kind of rolls back in and we shift back to more of a south flow yet again. But that still does keep the air quality in a moderate category here for most related to the smoke and haze. And it can keep temperatures down a couple of degrees to go with it. But either way, it will still be hot for the next several days with partly cloudy skies. Still not a lot of wet weather in the forecast, though Friday does look like we might still find a few isolated high base storms popping up here, especially in the Uintas. So that's something, if you're heading that way, keep in mind that you might actually get wet here a couple of times during the Friday time frame. But it still stays in the mid to upper 80s through most of the weekend. But by Father's Day, we'll tick back down into the low 80s. But we will not get into the 70s at all for the next 7 days, as we heat right back up heading into next week, as this crazy June, which will definitely go down as by and far the hottest on record, continues into next week.
Okay, Adam, stay cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you as well.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the superintendent of schools, Dr. Jill Gilday, along with business administrator Todd Halber, with an update on last night's meeting. We got a new budget, and we'll be talking about what that means for opening schools to staff. Assistant Park City Manager David Everett has a preview of this week's City Council meeting, and Allison Kulo, Park City Historic Alliance Executive Director, will have an update from yesterday's board meeting. Stay tuned.
This is Randy Barton, host of The Local View, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. weekdays on KPCW. We have a new feature. You can text in requests. You can pester me from afar with weird little tidbits of information if you like. You call our regular call-in line, 435-655-8255. You can text that number or phone it in. Fabulous. Looking forward to hearing from you. The Local View, 3 to 7 p.m. weekdays on KPCW.
And stay tuned. Coming up on The Mountain Life this morning, right after the local news hour, today's guests include Thomas Moore, a psychotherapist, former monk, and author of his New York Times bestseller, Care of the Soul. I'll be talking about his latest book called Soul Therapy, The Art and Craft of Caring Conversations. And Park City resident Peter Gosko, an anatomical physiologist and creator of the Egoscue Method, a safe and effective program used to provide permanent relief from chronic pain without prescription painkillers or invasive surgery. Again, all of that coming up on The Mountain Life right after the local news hour. Well, the Park City Board of Education last night adopted next year's school budget, also discussed the future of master planning and how to pay for it. In the studio, I have the superintendent of schools, Dr. Jill Gilday, along with business administrator Todd Halber. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Todd, we'll start with you. The budget adopted with no tax increase, and we've been talking about that we would need to increase taxes again to pay for the four-year contract salary. So what changed?
That's right. Yeah, so we had anticipated with the four-year contract that we'd have tax increases in years 2 through 4. As the assessments were coming in, and as the state auditor set the certified tax rate, the amount of growth that came through that process exceeded what we had forecast. And really, it's just that the growth in our area has generated additional tax revenue, so no need for a tax increase.
Right, and just screaming high property values?
That's it.
Yeah. What can you talk about what we've seen in terms of the increase in assessed valuation from a year ago?
Yeah, so the typical growth has been around 7 to 9%, and we're looking at something that's double digit. So we're like 11, almost 12% in assessed valuation change. And the growth itself was a little over 3%. So we're really in a period where the growth has its benefit, tax revenues, but it also has its burden. We'll have additional students to serve and support.
So what that means is that people will see a lower tax rate so that you're collecting the same amount of money, or you would collect a little bit more because of the growth?
So a little of both. So assessed valuations and the tax rate are inversely related to each other. So that's the general theory. It doesn't work out exactly that way because the rate is applied across the whole district, not just each neighborhood or each home. So individual experiences will differ, but that's the general theory, is as assessed valuations go up, the rate drops to keep that same revenue as last year. New growth is assessed valuations that didn't exist the year before. So that's new revenue that comes in, and that's the piece that grew and is benefiting the school district right now.
Benefiting the school district and taxpayers.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Okay, let's see. But we did still see, a 4% increase in your operations budget?
Correct. Yeah, the main drivers on that, for that 4%, about half of it is because of the compensation contracts that we have in place. So year two was about 2% of that number. And the other piece has to actually do with the basic levy. So when the basic levy is assessed by the state legislature, we as a school district have to impose that. And there's a certain amount of revenue it's expected to generate. And if we generate more than what is expected, we have to return those dollars to the state. And so the other 2% is that returning of basic levy revenue that we're not entitled to.
Okay, and what is it that we return to the state this year?
So in the budget right now, the number is about $12 million.
All right, which basically gets spread out amongst those districts that just can't raise the
Correct.
Kind of taxes that we can.
Yep, it supports the minimum school program.
Yeah, so Dr. Gilday, how do we, now with the budget approved, you had told me a few weeks ago that you'd have a better picture of what sections, if any, you could open to help accommodate the staff, given that we have closed schools officially.
Right. So closed schools are based on a calculation of the percentage of use in the school. So we're at about 90% capacity in our schools, meaning that our programs and our classrooms are taking up that space throughout the day. So we can't, we only have a certain number of classrooms to be able to put kids into.
So what does that mean, though? I mean, are you going to be able to accommodate? Because I know based on last night's public input, as well as from the new Education Association co-president Aaron Webb, it still sounds like there's tremendous angst and emotion about whether or not staff's going to be able to get their kids in Park City Schools.
Right. So always kindergarten is that toughest to predict age group. And so the best thing our families can do here in our community to support our educators and to support the school is to register their students if they intend to return to Park City School District next year as soon as they can. So around May 9th or 10th, parents did get the link to be able to register their children for Park City Schools for 21-22. And so as soon as we get those in and that levels out, that's how we're able to put students into those seats from the open enrollment applications.
So do we have room? I mean, is that what you can tell people?
We do. Todd and I have talked about this several times. And I mean, it's the same pattern that we've seen for the past 12 plus years. We're not really seeing anything different in the pattern of requests or the numbers. You know, it's not a huge spike, so it's really just following the process of filling out the one-page form.
So what do you tell those teachers then who have received those denial letters in their preferred schools? I mean, will they, do they need to reapply? Do they, I mean, or how is that, what's the process for that?
Yeah, no, the process is they receive a confirmation letter as those numbers level out. And what last night's budget did was, as part of the budget proposal, we do have sections that were on what we call kind of that bubble. You know, so 75 kindergartners in a school with three teachers is too many to start this time of the summer with, because we know there may be growth there. So you add the fourth section, all of a sudden you have additional spots, you know, because you're going to reduce that class size, and then we'll have room. So as soon as that happens, then that kind of shuffles people back into their seats.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of it, the timing on here. When will teachers know whether or not there's a seat for their kid?
Right, so in the early enrollment period, which is third Friday of February, whatever that is, right around February 22nd, there is a statutory timeline for that. And so that's when people got those initial letters, because by March 31st, we have to let them know. In the late timeline, people that applied after, we do have until October or August 1st to be able to let them know, but we are trying to do that sooner, you know, as soon as we have the sections
okay.
available.
So for the majority of teachers, they should know very shortly here.
Correct.
For those who applied late, it could be August.
It could be a little bit longer, but as I said, once we know we have the sections, then we're able to, you know, fill those seats. But like I said, the biggest thing our community can do is really, you know, register those kids as soon as you can, please.
So it sounded like teachers may have not received the communication they needed with regard to the registration timelines. You're telling me that really nothing changed.
That's what we're finding. I mean, when we review what's happened over the past dozen years, it's really the same thing. It's really the same language. It's the same highlight, the same form. But I do think maybe there has been a lot of informal. You know, school secretary, you know we have my kids here. Are you able to just type them in versus fill out a form?
Okay. So
I think it's just asking for the formality of the piece of paper to be filled in. So just like our residents provide proof of residency every single year, all we're asking our out-of-boundary families to do is to please fill out this one form that has their accurate address, that they are signing off that this is where they live.
It just sounds like there was a lack of communication, though. I mean, in terms of what teachers are supposed to do and what they've always done.
Right. And this is a state statute. So all of these timelines are outlined within that state statute. So these are not dates determined by Park City School District. They're dates determined by statute.
Okay. There was some request for the school board to consider sort of a roundtable for teachers to be able to discuss their concerns. Is this something that the district would participate and support in? Or?
So I believe as the policy is currently under external review, once that comes in, we will definitely do education pieces so that people are on the same page with how the process works.
Okay. Let's talk, while we're talking about teachers, how's the staffing effort go? It sounds like you had 16 teachers retire.
Yes, we had 407 years of experience leave us at the end of this school year. But again, that's not just teachers. You know, that's bus drivers and teacher aides and a school secretary, you know, so it's a number of roles within the system. But we got a good start and good early start on recruitment efforts, and we're really happy with the people who have applied and who are interested in joining Park City School District.
Okay, so you've got a pool of there, unlike some of the businesses in town. Yeah. And talk if you will about the purpose in passing an ordinance, or was it a resolution that was recognizing those that had retired? I mean, is that something that is done traditionally?
It is something that I've always found a nice acknowledgement of the amount of time and service that people put into a school district. So it's always something I recommend people see.
Sure.
As a community, it's something to celebrate, I think.
Okay. Todd, let's move back to you and talk a little bit about master planning. You had said that the requests for qualifications are in. There will be a selection committee formed soon to consider the respondents to manage the Park City High School expansion, a $60 million project. So what's the timeline here?
So the timeline is the responders have until July 2nd to put their qualification packets together. The selection committee will then start its work and put its recommendation together for board review. The simultaneous with that will be the request for proposals. So we'll qualify up to three firms, and then we'll talk to those three firms and say, here's the very specifics of the project. We know you can do it. Now this is what we want you to do. And they will put together their cost proposals and approach and how they will make the project happen for us. That will run into a little bit into the first week of August with the intent that the selection committee will review that request for proposal and make a final recommendation to the school board at its meeting on August 17th. So for that very first project, it'll take us till about August 17 to get everything pinned down and ready to go.
So I guess the good thing is that you do have interest and you do have the qualified companies that can do this. I mean, just given the growth in the state, it's
absolutely
kind of hard to find a contractor, huh?
Yeah, no, it was awesome. We had six contractors at our pre-qualification meeting. We had three architects at the meeting. We had a number of engineers. Or not three, we had six. We had six architects. So those teams will organize themselves to be a design build team. And we're excited, to have that many at this juncture with all the projects that are going on in the valley that someone's interested in looking up here.
So could the project start in 2021?
Very likely they could start that soon. That's where the financing picture comes into mm-hmm. question. And so we'll have to time that with when the funds are available.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. What has been decided for financing, at least the high school $60 million project?
Sure. So at this point, we don't have anything locked in. The opportunity that's before the board is to talk about a general obligation bond, and they can do that through a resolution. And that August 17th meeting would be the last opportunity they have to adopt a resolution for this election cycle. So we'll probably get very serious at that August 17th meeting about what exactly we will do to finance.
Okay, that's the deadline to get something on the November's
Correct.
Budget, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, would you ask for all $60 million? Would that be the way to do it?
I think the high school piece itself would be a little awkward to do just by itself for a general obligation bond. We want to look at all the projects that are lined up. So we have six projects, one at each of the schools. So we want to look holistically at all of the capital projects and put a bond proposition together, should that be the decision, that encompasses the whole gamut of what we're looking at. The high school project obviously is one of those elements that would be in that proposition.
All right. You've also been researching the option to use lease revenue bonds, but the price tags that we're talking about, up to upwards of $150 million, are unprecedented using lease revenue bonds. Maybe you can talk to how, if in fact a bond doesn't get approved in November, what the district would do? Then look to lease revenue bonds?
Yeah, so the underlying need of the district hasn't changed, regardless of the financing option. We have that need to bring the ninth graders into the high school. We have the need to bring the eighth graders over to Ecker Hill and the opportunities for preschool. Those exist. So we would have to find a financing option that then helps support those goals. And whether it's a lease revenue, it may be that it happens in pieces over time so that it fits more the conventional size of a lease revenue bond. But in the end, the need is still there, and so we'd find a way to fill that need.
So is that what you would do? I mean, are we talking about implementing this master plan within the next three years? I mean, is that why you'd have to ask for all of it up front in a GO bond?
Yeah, so in a GO bond, you're seeking authorization for whatever the level is called, the $153 million right now. And you have 10 years in which to exercise that authority. So we're already on a 10-year timeline. The expectations are to get our students into the buildings as soon as possible. So we front-loaded it, really. We've pushed much of the scheduling very early in that 10-year time frame. And so within the first 3 years is when we would like to have everything all done and taken care of. But we could stretch it into that 10-year time frame if needed.
Yeah. And have you put any of those numbers together? What something like that would look like for taxpayers?
Sure. Yeah. So a couple of months back, we had our financial advisor, Stiefel, come and actually do the scenarios for a GO bond and for the revenue lease bonds. And so what we're looking at is something that's probably in the $5 to $6 million range for principal and interest on an annual basis. And so we're looking at that, trying to see how we could accomplish that financing for the project. And that's assuming 20-year bonds and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And kind of given the assessed valuation that we're seeing, that actually is really looking good at this point.
Yeah, at this point, as long as we're in that growth scenario on the assessed valuations, what it does is it reduces the burden of an individual taxpayer. The principal and interest payment will still be the same, so that responsibility doesn't change. But how much an individual might pay towards that will.
Yeah, interest rates are still pretty low as well.
They're pretty favorable right now.
Yeah. In terms of the lease revenue bonds, what are interest rates there? Because they were low, but those fluctuate, it seems like, a little bit more.
And they're still bouncing around. I was looking at reports just the other day, and the 10 to 20-year term municipal bonds are, I can't remember now that I'm talking. They had moved about 5 to 8 basis points to our advantage. So they've dropped 5 to 8 basis points. So if that trend continues, that's a good scenario for a revenue lease bond.
Okay. Jill, wanted to ask you about the graduation rates. We've been told that those aren't going to be released until this fall because kids have to finish summer school.
Right. So, again, state timeline. Everything comes in about October, those reports typically. But we had 400 exceptional graduates. We're very, very proud of them. And, you know, $13.75 million in scholarships earned for this class, an average ACT score of 25, and an average GPA of 3.6. So by all accounts, a very successful class. 63% of the first-gen kids going off to 2- and 4-year schools, with over half of those earning exceptional scholarships.
Oh, good for them. So in terms of the kids that are taking summer school, did they get to walk? Depends, yeah, whether or not they were going to be able to finish it. In terms of in terms of those numbers, though, was it higher due to the pandemic? Do we know that?
Actually, we were very successful here in Park City School District. I do think that is due to our exceptional educators and administrators who really worked with each family and with our students to ensure that they were keeping up, whether they were remote, hybrid, or in-person learning. So I think due to those efforts, we actually had even more of a microscope on what the kids were and weren't doing, and were in communication, you know, with families to keep the kids on track.
Okay. And then in terms of this summer, we're going to be offering the lunches, free lunches for those
who qualify? We actually do have food services this summer, and we are already in summer school. So our high school kids started last week with any credit recovery or working ahead that they might want to do. And then we have about 600 kids enrolled in the summer school program. So we do have K-8, you know, services, and community ed does support that program.
That sounds large.
It's great.
Is it bigger than ever?
You know, last year we had really good participation too, and believe it or not, that was online. But this is in person, and I think families appreciate the opportunity to have the kids, you know, in a familiar location and keep them on a routine and keep moving.
All right. Anything else either of you'd like to mention?
It's been quite a busy year.
Yeah, I think we're all glad it's behind us, yeah. Okay, Dr. Gilday, Todd Halber, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, you too.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now is 8:31. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Midway residents are already facing water restrictions due to the current drought. KPCW's Ben Lassiter describes how residents will have to cut back starting now.
Midway Mayor Celeste Johnson called a Monday night meeting at Town Hall to tell residents the new rules for watering lawns. The town has been divided into 6 zones and placed on a 3-day-a-week watering schedule. Mike Kohler is the manager of the Midway Irrigation Company, which partnered with the city to create the drought plan. He He said the restrictions are the best way to keep water running in town without it running dry.
The way this is working out, the systems are split enough that we'll be able to serve everybody. Everybody's going to have to work together. If we get some that are stubborn enough not to, I guess we'll have to take a second step.
Each of the six zones has a slightly different watering schedule. The residential area of town is divided by Center Street into two zones. Those homes east of Center Street can water Monday, Wednesday, and Friday only at night, and those to the west of Center Street can water Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at night. But Kohler said if the drought worsens, the restrictions will probably have to tighten.
I fully expect that in a month we're going to be getting much worse. It might get down one time a week, two times a week. We'll have to see what happens.
Also at the meeting, Lance Larson, superintendent of the Wasatch Mountain Golf Course, said the golf courses in the area are also taking conservation measures, like cutting the grass higher and watering less often. For a map of the watering zones in Midway and a detailed watering schedule, visit kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
News time now, 8:32. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council meeting Thursday, starting in work session at 4 o'clock, both in person and via Zoom. In the studio, I have assistant Park City Manager David Everett. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So at 4 o'clock, Council will take up an hour-plus discussion on the budget, be looking at the fee schedule, ICE facility fees, council compensation. The budget is being cut by 1.5%, but only because of reduction in the transportation funds and the CARES Act funding. An increase in the budget would actually otherwise be reflected. And I guess we've got just money being put back into funds that were cut during COVID. So we're actually looking financially pretty well.
That's exactly right. The city's in a really strong financial position right now, I think in large part due to really historically good management, of course, I'd like to say, but also because during the COVID period of time, during that budget year, we really cut back and really conserved and really tried to hold back and, look at it honestly as an opportunity to find some efficiencies in place.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking about, I saw that we're going to be reducing the transportation budget by $2 million just because of the separation in transit right. services. We've purchased a lot of affordable housing for our bus drivers. Does that then open it up to others? Given that you don't have that many drivers anymore?
It's possible, although there are some federal restrictions on the use of those spaces because they were, I believe, built with federal funds. So there may be opportunities for for transit workers who aren't maybe part of Park City to also use them. That's my sense of things. So there will be some restrictions. It's not like the typical city housing projects that get built where the city really completely controls who can go in there.
All right. There was a long report just on the amount of fees going up. Water right. rates going up another 3%. Fees at the mark going up. Parking fines, planning fees. Is it safe to say that everything's going up?
Broadly speaking, yes. I think that's sort of the natural trend of things. I will say, though, it's worth noting that the mark fees, we're instituting a sliding scale there based on a person's income level. So if you can prove or demonstrate a certain income level, you received a reduced fee requirement there.
All right. Any other fees that you think that people ought to know about?
Although you kind of hit the highlights, we really did hit pause on any sort of fee increases in the last couple of years, and so it's time to just sort of catch up a little bit there. In so many cases, in virtually every case, fees don't pay for the full service, right? They really are just a minor piece of the revenue picture when it comes to providing these services.
Let's see, during the regular meeting at 6 o'clock, another discussion on the Park City Soils Management Facility update. The city is planning a community discussion next week, though.
We've already been had a couple of them in various parts of the city, and there's a couple more meetings, public meetings scheduled for next week, and then this is all sort of heading toward a city council public hearing in July to continue to take input about the proposed soils management facility.
Yeah, so we see this huge public outreach now, and I'm guessing, why didn't we do this years ago when we started first looking into it?
It's been a long road to get to where we are right now in terms of trying to figure out how to manage where we're going to put the soils associated with the big projects that the city is doing. Again, super important to emphasize, this is about city projects that are coming online, hopefully, in the next 3 to 5 years, housing projects, other roadway projects, the Arts and Culture District, of course. And so the Gordo proposal is really about the short-term needs to store those soils somewhere off-site. There's still a much larger conversation to be had around the long-term sort of permanent sense of what to do with soils in the city, because other, you know, there's construction projects happening all the time and soils are getting moved. And so, you know, there's still a need for a solution above and beyond what we're talking about here at the Gordo site.
Right. It can't be done on site.
The
soils.
For a project like the Arts and Culture District, it cannot, because we're planning to excavate so much. You know, some situations, if you can move and cap your soils on your site, then that's great. That's a much simpler solution. But if you're doing a lot of excavation, there's just no place for it on the site.
So the project then is on pause until we have this 60-day outreach?
That's right. The soils management facility project is on pause until we hear more from the public and the council has a chance to really weigh that in the context of the sense of need for the repository.
Yeah. And in terms of that outreach schedule, I mean, you'd mentioned that we've had a couple in Prospector and Park City Heights information sessions, but how did you reach out to those residents? The reason I didn't see anything. Nothing came in the mail. I didn't get an email. You certainly could do it by water billing.
Yeah, that's true. Those specifically were geared towards those HOAs, and I believe that the communication was mostly done through targeting the HOAs themselves. We did do some outreach online in particular, but these things are never perfect, and so that's why we're aiming to have multiple opportunities for people to either show up in person or via Zoom, via teleconference to be part of these meetings.
Okay, so come July 15th, that's when that 60-day pause ends, then what?
Well, then the council will hold a formal public hearing, and then really, you know, they get to decide how to move forward, if to move forward at all. And so, we don't know what the outcome of that will be. It could be a range of things. It could be a full stop. We're not doing a repository. It could be something, you know, it could be, stick with the original plan to go with what you were going with. Or it could be something in the middle where it's partially built and maybe it's open only for a very short period of time for a very specific project and then closed. So council has a lot of options, and really I think they have not in any way made up their mind about which direction to go yet until they hear from people more.
So I've been told that the county has not exhausted the Richardson Flat option. Apparently that was closed except for operating units 1 and 2 or something. But nothing, no soil's been moved from Summit County or in unincorporated property. I mean, is there room for Park City to use Richardson Flat? Is that an option?
Well, that was what the city was using up until about 10 years ago, right? So as a facility, I think my understanding is that technically there is space. However, there's the city's not been allowed to use that because of anticipated other uses. Now, I don't know the details of that and what the situation is there. I will say, though, that what the Gordo proposal includes is a lot more of a modern day version, I guess you could say, of a repository that includes a really aligned facility, which is not what exists out at Richardson Flat. And so the city's really, I think we're really trying to step up and say, we're going to go above and beyond what other repositories require to do this extra safe, and recognizing there's a lot of concern about dust and how you manage those sites. And at the end of the day, we got to make sure people are comfortable with that if this thing is to move forward.
Yeah. And then something else that people ought to know is that if, in fact, we do build this, we're going to ultimately save some $17 million?
I'd say at a minimum over time. I mean, based on the expectation of the projects that the city has on the dock, on the docket, transportation costs are the biggest portion of the expense associated with soils mitigation. And just don't see the cost of transportation going down anytime soon. In fact, someone sent me a photo of a gas station that had gas at $5 a gallon the other day. So I just really don't think we're going to be seeing long-term transportation costs do anything but go up.
All right. Let's see. Also on Thursday, the council will be presented with the fireworks and fire restrictions proposal. These are going into effect as soon as the council votes on them?
Well, actually, the council doesn't even vote on them. This is a move that the city has put into place. This is a council communication just to make sure everybody's on board and understands what's happening. But these restrictions are effective as of today.
And what are those restrictions?
Basically no fireworks in the city. You can't do it. It's just too dry. It's consistent with what's happening in the rest of the state and certainly within the county. So it's just making sure that it's clear to people that you just can't shoot off fireworks. It's just not the thing to do this year. There will be, you know, fireworks that are planned, that are programmed out there, and we really encourage people to enjoy those and not risk any sort of crazy, awful fire happening here in the city.
All right. So what do you know about planned fireworks show? I've kind of heard that they're all off the mark.
I actually don't. I don't know anything about what the plans are for those. You know, the city's not doing fireworks itself, but I don't know if the county or others are doing them or what.
Yeah, no, outlawed there as well. Have we moved into kind of stage one fire restrictions at this point? I mean, there's a couple of stages, but at this point, we're just putting in these first level of...
Well, this is specific to, combustibles. I don't know exactly what to say about that in terms of the levels. I would just say that at this point, common sense would dictate that you really shouldn't be having fires anywhere in the area, whether you're camping or not. I mean, even the fire that was down in the LaSalle Mountains was caused by an unintended fire in a designated fire pit. So it's just not the season to be doing anything related to fires.
Okay. What about those outdoor, not be too darn hot, but those gas fireplaces that people have?
Leslie, I shouldn't speak to the specifics. Okay. I don't know, but it'd be a great topic to have Dave Thacker come in and speak with you about.
All right. Also on the agenda, we're talking about bond council services, paying for those. What are we bonding for that we need those services?
There isn't anything necessarily planned in terms of a general obligation bond, but this is a standard set of contracts or support services that the city contracts for regularly, just in case things come up. And there's always opportunities that we're looking for to refinance bonds, or, you know, if in the next 3 to 4 years the council and the community decide to, you know, bond against the additional resort sales tax or other sources, then we have our team in place ready to do it. We don't have to kind of start from scratch.
All right. Also, an $85,000 contract there on the agenda to relocate a fiber optic line at the Quinns Junction Park and Ride lot. We're relocating it because it's there.
Exactly.
It's not that we did something wrong.
Correct.
Just, yeah.
Correct. It's there, but that's the planned location for about a 460-something stall park and ride there on that, the northeast corner of the intersection. And, it's just part of the process to get these utilities moved. And this is the company who owns them. And so we're obligated to help pay for those to be moved because it's our plan to do the park and ride.
Okay. When will that lot be open? For this winter?
No. The goal at this point is probably fall of 22. And that's in part because of the utilities issues, in part because the construction services have just been really a challenge to secure. You see that later in the agenda as well. We have an item to discuss with the council around just what a challenge it's been to contract out and get construction services in for a bunch of different projects, including the Rossi Hill road reconstruction.
Yeah, we can jump to that. There's a number of planned roadway construction projects, including Rossi Hill, Park Avenue.
That's right. And we're probably looking at a fall, bidding those in the fall for construction in 2022 at this point. So gives us a little more time to honestly work through refinements for the surface level there at Park Avenue. You know, if people like or don't like what's happening with what's now called a pilot project or striping that's on there now, then, you know, we'll be taking feedback on that up until the time that road gets redesigned.
All right. And we're spending more than $1 million on it. What are we doing to Park Avenue?
Well, we're going to be spending, I think, close to $7 million on it total. It's going to be a major reconstruction going down deep to deal with the wet utilities, as they say, the water, sewer, stormwater infrastructure. Like, it's a major, major rebuild. So it will not be a small project at all. It'll be, and that goes from Deer Valley Drive all the way up to Heber.
All right. Wanted to get to the transit separation agreement. What's next for Park City?
Well, this ILA, if the council approves it, that will be our end of the business, as it were. I believe the county council is reviewing it today as well. So, you know, there may be some back and forth still on items, but this has been, you know, a year's worth of work by our transit team and by our executive team to really get to this place. And I think it's been it's pretty impressive that we're there. I think it's been done with a lot of mutual respect. So next steps would be, if these ILAs are approved, then we execute them and start moving ahead with the separation, which would include the city, you know, transferring some buses over to the county eventually, and also the county taking on service through their contractor for out-of-city transit.
Yeah. So Park City is now in competition with the county, High Valley Transit, right, over those federal transit dollars?
Yeah, I mean, technically that's right. But we have a really great working relationship with people in the county, and I think that if something serves the county well, it's going to serve the city well, and vice versa at this point. And so we'll be pretty coordinated on our grant applications, so that while technically in competition, you know, we're probably not going to be trying to overlap at all.
Okay. And Park City has been a partner in that Park City SLC bus route. But High Valley Transit now taking all of that over, huh?
That's right. I mean, the PC, that route has not always, but more recently has only gone to the Kimball, the Kimball Junction Transit Center. So it's not come into the city anyway. You still had to transfer and get on the white. And so that approach, from what I understand, is not going to change. But yeah, you're right. The county is going to take responsibility for that contract.
Okay. Anything else, Dave, you wanted to mention?
No, just super excited to get into the budget, get the budget done here in the next few weeks. It's always a big deal for city and city employees. And so, thanks for having me.
Okay. Dave Everett, Assistant Park City Manager, thank you. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:48. The Historic Park City Alliance met yesterday, and in the studio with an update, I have Executive Director Allison Kulo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you're officially Executive Director through?
15 more days. 16, 14.
In June.
Obviously, math is not my strong suit this morning.
All right. And then this month, you've been working actually with your replacement.
Yes. Yeah, so Ginger Wicks, she is coming in as the executive director. She came on board officially on June 1st. And so what we've been doing is just doing some onboarding meetings. She is now fully on board. We just had our board meeting yesterday. And she's getting up to speed. We've got a very strong executive committee that I think will help that transition.
All right. What's next for you then?
For me, I am continuing my work with the local Habitat for Humanity affiliate, as well as I've accepted a position as the executive director of the Association of Language Companies.
Doing what?
The Association of Language Companies is a industry association for language services, whether it be translation, interpretation, glocalization. So really companies providing those services, and my job is to keep them organized.
Okay. And that you working from Park City?
Absolutely. Yep. That will be a remote job for the entire time I have it.
Great. All right, let's talk a little bit about Main Street Trolley. We had heard that was not going to happen this summer, but it looks like it's going to be brought back for weekends.
So, yes, the city is bringing it back as of July 1st. It was not originally budgeted for. They are able to bring it back for about 40 hours a week. Right now, that looks like it might be more four 10-hour days, Wednesday through Saturday. And then on Sunday, as people may remember, the street is closed for Park City Sunday Market, as well as car-free Sundays. So we have a separate shuttle going up and down Sweet Alley that does a turnaround in the brew pub parking lot to make sure people can get to the top of the hill.
Okay. There was, I believe, some surveying that was done, maybe by the city as opposed to you, about the trolley and even taking it up to the top of Daly?
Correct. During our update with Park City Municipal, they had mentioned that they are in discussions with the neighborhood, kind of at the base of Daly Avenue, King Road, whether or not they want to see the trolley continue to do a turnaround up there. For us, you know, it's up to the neighbors. It really is. If it's a service they need, great. But we want to, again, make sure that the trolley is rotating around Main Street. We are looking at it now going up Main Street down Sweet Alley so it can pick people up at the Transit Center as well as the China Bridge parking garage. So depending on how the neighbors determine, they're still able to meet our needs with a route, whether or not that includes the top of Main.
All right. Seems like it'd be kind of nice in ski boots if they could get on it.
I lived on Daly for a while, and any additional help you can get up that hill is appreciated.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. There's also talk about a transit shuttle. Is that different than the trolley?
No, that would be what I would describe as that Sunday shuttle. It's not the trolley going up and down Sweet Alley. It's just something a little bit smaller.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about car-free Sundays and employee parking. We are filling up by 10:45 Sunday morning. So where are people parking that want to come?
So again, we have parking available at the Park City High School. For those employees that have the employee permits, they are allowed to park on the north side of City Hall, so the north City Hall lot. From what we're hearing, there is availability in that lot for people with permits. And that's been staying pretty good all day, but really encouraging the community to park at the high school and take the bus up. I believe those buses have 15-minute frequencies.
Okay. And then in terms of employee parking then, are they allowed to park in China Bridge or no?
Yeah, so employees are, if you have an employee parking permit, we'd prefer you park in the north parking lot just because that is for you for this day. But yeah, employees can park in China Bridge. It is an event fee parking. So, you know, it is a higher cost. Sandridge parking lots are available for free, but those fill up by 10 a.m. on Sundays. So it is very limited.
All right. And then what about the Homestead parking lot? Is that still being used?
So Homestead is something that we typically use during the winter. And that is kind of right behind the Boneyard Blind Dog. That is currently slated for affordable housing. Park City Municipal is going through an RFP process. Our big concern was that lot going to be available for this upcoming winter? The city has said that it will be available. We're excited to see that, knowing that Richardson Flats and the HOV lane for buses on 248 would not be in effect next winter. So to be able to have some local employee parking is appreciated.
Okay. And then in terms of Sundays, are we getting the crowds spread out or is it still being concentrated lower Main Street?
We are not getting the crowd spread out, I'll be honest. It is hard, as everyone's seen, whether it was during Car-Free Sundays last year or Silly Markets previous, when you have a street with the steepness and slope that you have of Main Street, it is super difficult to get people to the top. And unless we've got some sort of raging rocking party at the top, it's really, it's hard to encourage people to go up. We had a meeting last week with Park City Municipal as well as the Silly Market to collaborate. This coming Sunday is the Latino Arts Festival. They're going to have a lowrider display on Main Street up kind of in front of the Wasatch Brew Pub, Treasure Mountain Inn. So looking at ways that we can take kind of things already existing or happening on Sundays and make more of an emphasis at the top of the street.
Okay. What are you hearing from businesses on Main Street in terms of are they finding the employees they need?
No, they're not. And just like every business in this community, we are not able to staff appropriately. What the community is going to start seeing is that businesses are not going to be able to be open 7 days a week. Restaurants aren't going to be open seven nights a week. So they're going to start looking at how they're scheduling their employees and scheduling them for days where, again, you know, they can maximize those shifts. The chamber, Jennifer Wesselhoff, is working on a plan. How do we start to address this in this community? There's lots of different factors that lead to this. I mean, if you look at it, we don't have enough people in town to necessarily work at these businesses. So how do we attract someone who's coming from outside of the area? How do we attract someone when we have difficulty parking employees? How do we attract someone when it is a 35-minute drive and gas prices are going up? How do we do this? And of course, affordable housing is one way, but can we house everyone that we need to work here? We can't. So how do we make transit fluid? How do we make sure that when employees are asked to park at a park and ride lot, that it's not an hour drive in with 17 stops? How do we make it easy?
Yeah. What about the visa workers, the J-1, the H-2B? I mean, are we going to see some of those folks come back and help?
We don't believe we're going to be able to see them this summer, but starting this fall, Deer Valley Resort gave a little bit of an update at our board meeting yesterday that they're working on that and hoping to start to see some people come in August. Usually that's a trickle-down effect. Bigger employers are able to kind of draw in the J-1 visas better. But then what we do find is many of them take second employment on Main Street. And that is something that's positive.
All right. Also, I think we got to the bottom of what happened with the first Chalk of the Town mural.
Yes. So we have murals that were coming out. We did 3 weeks where a mural would be complete on a Friday, and then it would stay until it was naturally kind of washed off, whether it be with foot traffic or weather. Our first mural, it was unveiled on a Friday night. That next Saturday, by midday, the mural was completely gone. From our understanding, cleaning of one of the compactor buildings right next to it had some water kind of flow down into that area, which had ruined it. In order to take care of it, they did just clean it up. They did a fantastic job cleaning it up. However, it did remove the art piece.
So what's the lesson here? I mean, do we just need to give people a heads up that this is art and it's stained and don't mess with it?
Well, you know, from the debrief that we've done on our end, as well as Park City Municipal did, all communications went around. It was just that no one, I believe, understood that when you cleaned that building, water could drain down into the area where the chalk was. So it seems like it was not a lack of communication. It was a lack of understanding of how water flowed during or in that area. And there's no one to blame. You know, it's unfortunate. It's a bummer. We are working with the artist Sarah Means to come back and to do another piece. But yeah, unfortunate.
Okay. And you said another one is going to be done?
We are now done through this kind of phase of it. We are going to be relaunching this again in September.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I think just, you know, I've been super pleased to be able to hold this role for Main Street. The businesses are amazing. It's an eclectic group, and they have a lot of opinions and a lot of things to say and share, and I couldn't have had a better time.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. We'll see you around, though.
Absolutely.
That's Allison Kulo, again, the outgoing executive director of the Historic Park City Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:59. We're up to 64 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, another hot one. And as we saw, just, man, records breaking left and right. 89 is our expected high today. With winds out of the south-southwest, we're going to see some smoke blow into the area tonight. Expecting to see those hazy skies remain tomorrow. 88 tomorrow, 87 by Friday, mostly sunny, and 85 on Saturday. And in the Heber Valley, looking for a high today of 99. Again, with hazy skies tonight and tomorrow, 98 on Thursday and Friday, down to 96 on Saturday. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Coming up, we've got headline news from NPR, followed by The Mountain Life. This is KPCW Park City. It's 9 o'clock.